Hello, this is the Scottish Football Show, and here's what's coming up. Where has the Clark spark gone? Scotland are now winless in seven. Super Steny are brilliant bairns. Who will be the first to win the league? And Airdrie, they pick up a cup. Right, it's a new week, an international week. But it's not just tartan tantrums we're having on this show today. No. That's reserved for Tynecastle. More on that later. It was a silverware weekend, as well as plenty of controversy. So joining me on the podcast tonight, he's the Paisley punter from Down Under, Melbourne City's creative director, Finlay Marks. Hello, pal.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm very, very well. Thank you for asking. That's nice. I don't know why I said it like that. But that means a lot. Thank you for asking. Shall I introduce the next one, Finn? My sister from another mister, the female Chris Sutton, because she divides opinions everywhere. But leading the march for Scottish content on TNT Sports, their senior producer, Laura Brannan, nodding in agreement.
Yeah, I thought that was quite an accurate introduction there.
Apart from you don't look like Chris Sutton, but you do divide opinion, you're right. We had fun the other day though, Laura, didn't we?
We did up until about the 75th minute of the game. It was good to see you for the Netherlands game.
I know I was late for the game.
You missed the best part when we were playing our best.
Yeah, well, that is true. I did arrive to the pub, Finn, to see Laura going, oh my God, we're going to win the Euros.
That is exactly what my attitude was like in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, but it was a good atmosphere. What was that pub called again?
The Famous Three Kings in London.
Famous Three Kings. Pretty cool place. Got like TV screens everywhere.
Yeah, if you're ever in London for a Scotland game, definitely it's a good place because all the Scottish London-based Scots will meet in that pub for the game. So it's a good atmosphere. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Right, should we get stuck into some funnies? I think we should do that and have a laugh. Cheer our spirits up.
I want Guinea to win if we're not playing against him.
Do you?
Not the competition, I mean his game.
Well, you want Scotland to win when you're watching Scotland?
Yeah, like, I don't go, if you're playing, I don't want you to lose.
I would want you to beat if you were playing for England.
He's not a new national hero, but he's came to the fore once again to save us from some opinions from down south, shall we say. John McGinn, Laura, he's just the best.
I love him. we all do. He's incredible. If you saw the latest, so Aston Villa put out a video and it was him and his teammate Ollie Watkins. And they were taught, I don't know where it all stemmed from, but basically Ollie Watkins said to him, oh, when Scotland are playing, I want you to win. And John McGinn went, what? Why do you want us to win?
Really?
I don't want you to win when you're playing for England. And Ollie Watkins was really taken back by this. And he was quite confused. He's like, well, why? Well, I want you to do well. And John McGinn's response was, well, yeah, I want you to do well as well. I want you to score a hat-trick, but I want you to lose 4-3 at the same time. And it was just to kind of hear how he was trying to explain to an Englishman how rivalry works and why he doesn't want his rival to actually win a game of football. I think it's just how we all feel. And he just spelled it out in a very nice, simple way. John McGinn does, very to the point, and yeah, it was very, very funny to hear.
He made a little bit of a dig to like broadcasters as well, though, didn't he? Because he was very much a case of, oh, if I watch BBC and it's a World Cup and England are playing, it's all us. And it's like, well, that doesn't represent the rest of the country, not everyone supporting England.
Which I think also sums up why everyone wants England to lose, because it's not a hatred towards the nation or the people. It is how frustrated everyone is by the arrogance. And it's mostly the media that drives that. So everything he said was actually quite true.
What I love is that he underlined why there's such animosity. At the end of the day, it's a rivalry. I remember, was it earlier on this season or at one point last season, because we had Ewan Booth-Robertson on, and he was saying, he's like, I don't get the whole thing with like, laughing at England when they get a bad result of the few times it happens or whatever, because he's like, we're not rivals. And I'm like, but that's not how rivalry works. Like, it's not, I know they don't see us or consider us as rivals in a competitive sense, but historically we are. It's the oldest rivalry in world football.
Yeah. It created international football.
It did. And we taught them how to play.
And I always kind of joke about it, but that it's quite like Scotland have kind of small dog syndrome where they're kind of annoyed that England don't hate us as much and don't count us as a rival, because we're kind of like the little dog barking away going, no, hate us. Like, we don't want you to support us, and we want you to want us to lose the same way we want you to lose. That's
Yeah.
literally what football's about.
It does annoy people down here, though. Like, even in a work environment, when you just shout, like, oh, come on, Brazil, for instance, or whatever. Like,
Don't quite understand
it
why we
does.
support anyone but
They,
England.
yeah, they do kind of go, like, what? What are you on about? It's just because they just don't know. It's just some fun, and they just get a wee bit pent up about it, which makes it even more fun.
What resonates with so many Scotland fans is the fact that here's a guy who's been, a pivotal figure for the national team for a number of years, has excelled playing in one of the biggest leagues in the world. He's the captain of this historic English team. They're doing really well. They're making moves at the right end of the table in the Premier League. And at the end of the day, he's just a Scotland fan as well. Like, he's like one of us from the terraces at Hampden out there on the pitch, just being like, of course I don't want you to win. It's like, I like you. You're my teammate at club level. So by all means, go out and bag a hat trick. I don't want you to win. I want you to lose 4-3. And that is just underlining of that whole playfulness of that rivalry. It's what makes a sport so wonderful. It was probably good that Laura wasn't there on that occasion filming that one, because after he'd said that, she would have just stood up, knocked the camera over, going, "We've got him again."
Some referee news, always a hot topic in Scotland. But Crawford Allen is stepping down at the end of the season. He's obviously the head of refereeing in Scotland, has been in the role for about 4 seasons, but he's gone, he's leaving. It's all over. Who's next? Who knows?
Who wants the job?
I don't know. I think it's a pretty prized job amongst refereeing in Scotland. At least it's certainly the only full-time job.
I just feel like there's just no reward for this at all. Obviously, the VAR is not everything that he does. There's a lot more to his job, but he will be remembered as the one that kind of, well, was in charge, that brought it
Integrated it,
in,
yeah.
integrated it and led with it. And time will tell if that will be seen as a legacy or not, but he was just happened to be, and maybe arguably the wrong place at the wrong time, if that's the way you want to look at it. But it's such a historic time that he was in charge, that that's how he'll be remembered, regardless of every
That's
other
his,
part of his job.
that will be his legacy for sure. I hope it gets better, because then it will probably, people will look back and probably think, well, that's where it started, and hopefully VAR gets better in a few weeks.
Not to be cynical about it, but they said it was a mutual decision, quote unquote. And I've got my doubts about that. I think he's being made a fall guy for it, because ultimately, like you're saying, he's kind of at the top of that system, and he's been the one that's been overlooking VAR. I think it'll probably be something that they heavily focus on for whomever comes in to replace him, because obviously he's not worked under VAR, but he had to implement it, Crawford Allen. I think they'll want somebody who's got more of a background in that. Will it be someone from Scotland? Will it be someone from overseas? I don't know. It was interesting reading the statement, and I do think that there's a culture shift that needs to happen, and that's what I'm hoping might happen with somebody else coming in, because when you see things like the independent review that came out saying, I think they'd said there'd been 13 mistakes that they'd alleged, or 13 incidents where VAR hadn't reached the correct conclusion according to the laws of the game. And then the SFA and Crawford Allen come out and say, well, actually, we don't disagree, we don't agree with that. There were only 3 mistakes. It's like, if you're marking your own homework and not even buying into the PR of it, you don't need to necessarily admit there's a problem. And there is, by the way, a quite a grave one, but we'll come on to that in a second. You have to still be like, we'll take on the findings on board. Our referees have got a very tough job, blah, 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 doing all this. If you came out with that, people would respect you so much more, but they just don't back down, double down all the time, as Lemmy would say, But they're just like, no, we don't see it as that. No, we're actually doing a really good job. If you're telling people that what they are witnessing week in, week out is not what's actually happening, you're never going to curry favour or change opinion. And there has to be that sea change, I think, in the way that they see themselves in the job that they're doing. I don't know if they'll admit there's a mistake, but it all circles back to exactly what I was saying last week and in a number of episodes this season. None of this changes until we have full-time referees. That is the biggest thing underpinning all of this. You can have somebody full-time doing it. You can try and implement these professional elite tier systems like VAR and all the new rules and everything. At the end of the day, if you've got amateurs, which is what they are, people who are part-time doing this essentially as a hobby on top of demanding full-time jobs already, you will not change the refereeing and officiating culture in Scotland.
Well, yeah, I totally agree, but I don't think we'll ever see it happening because the Scottish referees don't want it and it's going to cost a lot of money. So we'll move on. Rangers women have retained the Sky Sports Cup. They did it at Tynecastle on Sunday. They beat Partick Thistle 4-1. And of course, Rangers are on track for a historic treble winning season, potentially. But the victory at the weekend was slightly soured, let's say, because of something which happened in the dressing room. Do you want to explain what happened, Laura?
So this game was hosted at Tynecastle. And the picture came out, Rangers had put a badge over the Hearts badge, which is on the floor in the home dressing room. It was done in a very crude way, let's put it that way, because it wasn't completely covered. It's a smaller badge stuck on top of the Hearts badge. So it's very obvious what they've done. And it caused a bit of a kind of uproar online because Hearts fans were going, well, this is really disrespectful. And in the hours that followed, Hearts then put a statement out essentially saying exactly the same, saying that no matter what the explanation is for this, we didn't give permission and our crest has been defaced. So they're not happy about it. And of course, Rangers fans are naturally defending it. So it's caused a little bit of an uproar.
What's really interesting is Anthony Joseph, who's been on the podcast before quite a few times. There's footage that's came out or has been seen by him of Rangers winning at Tynecastle last season, and the badge is exactly where it was before. So this apparently happened last season as well. So why the uproar now? Is it because it's came out in the public domain? Or perhaps also maybe Hearts didn't know anything about it last season either. How much of an issue is it, Finn? Is this something where media teams are going to have to tighten their freedom of releasing footage and stuff like that?
So I hadn't seen much about this until not long before we started recording. And if you hadn't told me the teams involved, because I think everybody will just be like, well, you're a Rangers fan, you've got the blue tinted spectacles on, blah, blah, blah. I will try and be as magnanimous as possible. I don't think I really see in principle the issue with it, because what you've got here is a cup final that is played in a neutral venue that happens to be Tynecastle. The way that the dressing rooms are set out is that there's Hearts badges everywhere. If you have two teams coming in and they're wanting to film everything and you know, taking photographs and all that, you kind of don't want another team's badge all over the backgrounds and the floors and stuff like that. So I don't kind of have an issue with it in that regard. What is bizarre though is, like you're saying, Laura, it doesn't fit. Like, why would you make it so that you're putting something down that doesn't fully cover the badge underneath? It just looks a bit hon-knit-it, as my granddad would say. It just looks a bit scrappy. Like, why would you do it?
Cover it completely or not at all.
That's the thing. Or just take out the badge neutral. So, like, have a mat that's the same colour as the floor or whatever that goes down, just to block it out. You could even just Photoshop it out afterwards. I don't think anybody would care, but it is that thing. I've been trying to think about this. If the shoe was on the other foot, so if this, for example, the final was Celtic versus Partick Thistle and they'd used Ibrox as the neutral venue, would I be annoyed? As a Rangers fan, it wouldn't be nice to see the Celtic badge all over, you know, a blue floor and doing all that. But at the same time, if I'm thinking at it from Celtic's point of view, you don't want all your celebration pictures and pre-match pictures having a big Rangers badge in the middle of it.
They'd probably request the away room, wouldn't they? Sorry, guys, we'll just take the away dressing room, as always, as usual.
They'd
usually,
probably,
you know,
only be allowed it, to be honest. I don't think so. Give them the home one. But what I actually think here is this is maybe the fault actually lies with the league. organisers here, because I saw a tweet where somebody put out a photo from the Conference League final last year. It was actually what my footage, it was a screenshot from my footage of West Ham. So thanks for the plug on Twitter. But the guy that was tweeting it was saying essentially, well, look, this is West Ham Stadium, this is West Ham's badge in Sparta Prague Stadium when they won the trophy. And everyone was okay with that because their badges are a different dressing room. That's not the issue here, because when it comes down to it, when UEFA take over stadiums like that for cup finals, they brand everything to be in line with that competition.
Yeah, it becomes a UEFA stadium, doesn't it?
Yeah. That whole dressing room was branded to look like a West Ham area under UEFA terms. And it wasn't just somebody came in from West Ham and slapped a badge on top of Sparta Prague's badge. It was very precisely designed and decorated in advance. It's not the same. You can't. It's not an equal comparison. But what you can say as well, no, Hearts said that they didn't give permission for this. So either they were asked and said no, or they weren't asked in the first place. So you've got to kind of beg the question of, well, if the league or the cup organiser should be designing this and owning this and taking control of this to make it look as though it's a neutral venue, and they haven't done it.
Yeah, but ultimately, Laura, that's money and time and resource and manpower, which the league might just no have. So it's another thing to say that, because obviously UEFA, the budgets are a total different game. The one thing that bugs me is, how did they not know about it? Did they just cover the badge up in some like brown paper and go like, just keep it, just don't show anyone, guys?
Just wheel it in from the team bus.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, it would have been the kit team who normally arrive first, right? So, or I don't know if it's different in the women's game or whatever. I just don't know. But it's a pretty, it's obviously no small. So the fact that they, how did they not know about it? Yeah, exactly. But I think it's interesting. Obviously, by the time everyone's listening to this, there might be more. But I did see Anthony's tweet about it, saying that same venue last season and same crest on crest last season.
It also begs the question, if it did happen last season, how did they not measure it last year and come with the right size badge this year?
Or why were Hearts not prepared for it?
Well, maybe Rangers were in the away dressing room last season. I don't know. Terrible, terrible, guys. It's an absolute shocker. How could they not have made it bigger? Size matters, right?
We're going to need a bigger badge.
Elsewhere, let's go to the Highland League. There was another amazing moment amongst goalkeepers. The goalkeeper union could have their own goal of the season contender this year because Keith FC goalie Craig Reid, I mean, this doesn't really fit a goal of the season contender, but because it's a goalkeeper, it's class. Laura hates it. So fucking miserable, Laura. Anyway, Huntley, Keith playing local rivals Huntley. Huntley are 1-0 up, dying seconds of the match in stoppage time. Corner, flies in. Craig Reid, sort of bicycle kick, sidey-onny volley, in for an equaliser. And the funny thing is, the best thing about it is Craig used to play for Huntley, but the way he celebrates is amazing. He just goes bananas.
A goalkeeper scoring is like seeing a dog on the pitch, or, you know, it's just like one of those things in football you just love to see. So I know it's not the most aesthetically beautiful overhead kick. All, just as a side note, can you trademark a sidey-onny, what was it you just said? A
sidey-onny volley.
Volley. You need to trademark that, because commentators need to be doing that. You need to hear Peter Drury yelling that out during a Champions League final. In terms of pure aesthetics, you weren't a fan, Laura, were you, when we shared this?
No, I was quite underwhelmed by this goal. I love the goalkeeper story. I love that element to it. But the actual, that's a scramble inside the box for me.
Honestly, Laura, for a lassie who like loves the moments and the drama and the pictures and all, everything that comes around it, and just, you know, those key iconic feels, and you're just like, that was shit.
Okay, fair. Okay, you put me in my place there.
In terms of the other goals, I think it was really the least aesthetically pleasing goal that a goalkeeper scored in Scotland this season, which is just a lovely sentence to say anyway in a podcast. Because you got, was it Rudy Adams scored on like his seventh professional game or something for Edinburgh City against Queen's Park, Queen of the South? But obviously the actual Puskas nominee is going to be Ali Adams for Arbroath against Wraith. That is the best goal hands down in Scotland this season, in the world this year, hands down.
Yeah, if he's not picking up the goal of the season award from the PFA,
Game's gone.
This year. It's a, it's a shocker, man, honestly.
Scrap the award then, because you can't take it seriously.
As well, there was some silverware, other silverware as well, I should have said. I should have probably put the two cup finals together, but the Keith goalkeeper's worthwhile breaking it in between, because it was the Challenge Cup final. Oh no, it wasn't the Challenge Cup final. It was the SPFL Trust final. Yes, trust in the SPFL. Airdrieonians lifted their first trophy in 15 years, or just a bit over 15 years, because they beat Welsh invitees, TNS, or the New Saints. And this is good for Scottish football, Laura, because we don't want, even though we invite them, we don't want them to win, do we?
Just come along and take part and know when to leave.
Preferably in the semi-finals.
I think it would just have been a bit silly had they won the actual tournament. I think we've all talked about this many times. Don't think we're all big fans of the fact that there's teams from England, Ireland and Wales getting into the competition in the first place. But okay, fine, we've rolled with it for quite a while now. And mostly they go out in the first few rounds and everyone's like, phew, okay, great, move on now. TNS getting to the final, though, you're just like, please don't have a Welsh team win a Scottish competition. It just looks a bit tin pot. So thanks, Airdrie, for doing everyone a favour there.
Do you know what's funny about TNS, actually? That they thought their victory against Elgin in the earlier rounds, they counted that as a victory. So they got to a point where they thought they'd equaled their world record amount of wins. And then the Guinness Book of World Records had to turn around and go like, we only count wins in 90 minutes. So they had to like pull back all their celebrations. They think they've broken the world record already. So yeah.
A bit embarrassing. There was something very similar recently where I think it was one of the Saudi Pro League teams had put out a massive, made a big deal about, oh, we've won 28 games in a row. It's a world record.
Al-Hilal.
Yeah. And the amount of community notes underneath just being like, yeah, East Kilbride broke Ajax's record from the 70s with like 30 wins in a row a couple of seasons back. So I don't know if they've gone on to beat it since, but it was just really nice for them, all that these billionaires from the Middle East being humbled by East Kilbride.
Yeah, true.
Good old EK.
It was Airdrieonians Day though. Let's focus on Airdrie. Nikolai Todorov with the penalty winner, really, to finish 2-1. Airdrie had to come down from 2-1, from 1-0 down they were. And the equaliser, by the way, oh my God.
It's such a beautifully taken goal. I love seeing strikers who just instinctively go to hit something. And it's one of those brilliant shots that as soon as it's left his boot, you're like, that's in. You just know that as a football fan, that's going in the back of the net. We've spoken about it a few times on the show. Just the job that Reece McCabe's done there has been incredible. Because he's still, for such a young manager, he's done an incredible job. And it's not just, oh, he's getting the results and, you know, he took them up through the playoffs last season. The brand of football that they're playing is actually really good to watch. Some of the team goals they've scored this season, the passing and movement. What's really nice about it to me is that a lot of the time, you'll see managers try and do the, oh, we build from the back kind of thing, because it's like the de rigueur way of being a football manager. It's like, start with the goalie, play out from the back. And a lot of times you don't have the players to do it. But a good coach is able to translate what he wants in a simplified way, maybe with players that aren't, in terms of ability, capable of playing to a certain style of football. But he's able to bring in players and get them to play that he wants them to play. And that's good attacking football that's pleasant on the eye. And it's nice to see them win a trophy. So, yeah, fair play to them. Oh, I mean, it doesn't always translate to longer term success. We saw Hamilton win the trophy last season and they still ended up getting relegated. So, but it's the job that Reece McCabe's been doing there has been exceptional so far, I think.
Bear in mind, he's also playing as well. So it's a really unique situation where, I mean, he was 29 years old when he took over.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, promotion, as you say, in his first season. And they still could finish in a playoff spot this season too. So the idea of them being in the Premiership is a bit bonkers, but it's not far stretched. And good luck to him, because it is quite a good little success story. And I hope, it keeps going well for him, because he's only 31. I'm 35. Come on, man. This is when it gets really hard to watch football sometimes. Yeah. He's 31, leading a band of men to victory and cup
triumphs. Have you done your life, Andrew?
Well, as a previous football manager myself, running Air United, not Air United, UWS seconds team. 3 years and not a single victory, and highest defeat was 19-0. Let's say I've done bloody well to be doing a Scottish football podcast. But yeah, well done, Airdrieonians, smashing the Welsh, just like we like to see. Anyway, that match took place in Falkirk Stadium, which is where we're going to stay, because the Bairns themselves in the League One are close to clinching the title.
So Falkirk are on the brink of being crowned champions of League One and booking their place back in Scotland's top tier. It'll happen this weekend if they better Hamilton Accies' result. They're away to Montrose and Accies are hosting Queen of the South. But even if it doesn't happen this soon, the Bairns are still a huge 17 points clear with 6 games remaining. So to look ahead to the almost inevitable party is Clyde One producer and Bairns fan from the Falkirk Daft podcast, John McInally. John, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Oh, all good, all good. But how are you feeling, John? This is an exciting time.
I'm still, I don't know what it is. I think it's just 5 years of heart, Laura. I don't want to say that we're champions yet. I think everybody else, for the last few weeks, everyone's been saying to me, oh, it's done, it's done, it's done. But I know, I've got this inherent Falkirk in me that knows that we can mess it up at any time. I don't think we obviously will, because we've been brilliant this season. But yeah, it's amazing to think that we can come champions this weekend. It didn't happen last weekend. Obviously, we were 25 minutes. We're champions for 25 minutes. But Hamilton obviously came back against Cove to win that game, which I was grateful for, Hamilton, because it means I'll get to see the party, because I was in Copenhagen for a stag do. So I would have potentially missed the party, but I've got my tickets for Montrose booked and ready for it this weekend, fingers crossed.
Well, I was going to say that. I saw the crowds gathering, queuing up before the game, and I was going to say, was it a kind of air of disappointment? Because it wasn't on home turf, but clearly you were not caring about that whatsoever.
I know, I was in Denmark, I saw the results coming through, and I was quite disappointed because I wanted to try singing We Are the Champions in Danish. but did get the chance to do that. But Hamilton did me a favour anyway, so I get to go along with, I think they're expecting, well, certainly over 2,000 Bairns heading up there. There's the option to sell more tickets. We've got an allocation of 2,500 with a potential extra 900 on top of that. It's on the television, obviously, 5:30 kickoff, but there'll be a large contingent heading up from the Falkirk area for that on Saturday.
That's amazing. It's such an incredible lead to have as well, and you can almost be fussy now over which point you clinch it at. But what's been the success factor this season?
It's the big difference this season, Laura. It's been recruitment from John McGlynn. The players we've brought in, we've got a real spine of the team. Beforehand, he was, you know, I think he said himself it's going to take a couple of transfer windows. But the likes of Tom Lang has really brought it along, Cole Donaldson alongside him. Brad Spencer in central midfield's been an absolute revelation. They've seen Ross McKeever, who we signed from Alloa, didn't have massive expectations, but he's been really, really good. Probably doesn't have got as many goals, but he's been excellent. So that spine of the team has been really, really good. Add to that, the two guys coming off the wide areas, Callum Morrison, who is now top scorer in SPFL, and Calvin Miller, who, you know, he's been excellent. You know, had a wee bit of injury problems at the start, but he's coming to the side. And the big question is, I can't work out who's a better player. I think Callum Morrison, after his 4 goals at the weekend, might just be edging it now. But they've been a big difference. And the players that were already there, Leon McCann, Aidan Nesbitt, got to mention them because they're definitely up their game. And I think it's playing alongside the players that they now are, that it's brought them up a level as well. So it really has been down to John McLean, Paul Smith's recruitment this season. I think that's the reason we've really kicked on.
You mentioned Callum Morrison there. I mean, he's going for fun right now. He overtook Lauren Shankland as the highest goal scorer in the SPFL at the weekend. How big is it that he's just signed his new contract?
Absolutely massive. I think when we saw that there was deals on the table and there was deals going out, we signed a lot of big players. Like, again, I've got to mention Liam Henderson's been brilliant. Let's big centre half that they put in the midfield's been outstanding. But Callum was one that we thought, do you know what? If he goes, he's given us 4 years. He's scored a lot of important goals for us. But if he goes, you know, I'm absolutely dumbfounded and amazed that, say, someone like a St Mirren or a Motherwell or one of those tables, kind of mid-table Scottish Premiership, have not looked at Callum Morrison going, that guy's, you know, scored all these goals from the wing. I mean, he scored a few penalties, right enough, but, you know, his assists and his goal scoring, his numbers are brilliant. So it really does surprise me that no one's taken a look at him. Because we were all resigned to him going at the end of the season, signing a pre-contract with one of these teams and then leaving us. But for John McGlynn to get him in our 2 years, it's a brilliant bit of business. And as I say, because the recruitment's been really good, I think we do have a team. We're short of, I'm honest, we're short of a few positions where we could improve on. But the core of the team and the fact that John McGlynn's retained a lot of these guys and put them on contracts, we've got a lot of players that are at championship level. So that kind of bodes well, hopefully, for next season.
Absolutely, because, I mean, you look at, fuck it, we're relegated to League One. The lowest level that you guys have been at since, what, 1980, was it? I mean, you're not a League One side. So does this almost feel like it's just a serve now, getting back to the Championship, and you're back where you belong, and now it's kind of, how far can you go after that?
Yeah, I mean, we've got ambitions. I think, you know, when you look at Cobb's Falkirk size, our big rivals, Dunfermline as well, these clubs are, you know, are really relatively, they're bigger than some of the Premiership sides, you know, in terms of their fan bases. And we're there for a reason. We're in League One for a reason. We were mismanaged both at a board level and at a football level as well for many years. But it does, you know, we do feel like, you know, if we get back up into the Championship, that is where our level should be at. You know, like Dunfermline, like a few of the clubs in there, you know, we had that, we have for, you know, during the 90s and noughties, we were a wee bit of yo-yo. You know, but flipping between that Championship and Premiership is where Falkirk should be as a club. And, you know, it's come up to our 150th anniversary. That's the plan, to be back in the Premiership by that point. So fingers crossed we can do it. You know, back-to-back promotions would be quite nice.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Right, okay. We were really looking forward to this section when we were planning how to do this podcast early last week. But yeah, with Euro 2024 just around the corner, 11 weeks, I think, away, Scotland went into this international break full of optimism and excitement, despite being winless in 5 before this camp. But has the excitement gone, and has the worry began to set in after 2 hugely, hugely disappointing results? Scotland offered a lot of hope early on against the Netherlands, but that eventually ended in a 4-0 defeat. And then, despite all the right things being said post-match, it got worse against Northern Ireland, who hadn't won on Scottish soil since 1974. But yeah, Laura, it was one of the worst games of football I've watched under Steve Clarke. What about you, who was in the stadium?
Yeah. I came away thinking, I can't remember enjoying a Scotland game less than I did tonight. I feel like we played better against Ukraine in the playoff, and that was probably one of the worst experiences I've ever had at Hampden. It was awful. Everything that could go wrong kind of just went wrong. It was slow, it was sloppy, it was unimaginative. There was no speed, there was no intensity, there was no appetite. Every decision was the wrong decision, and every ball went to the wrong player. Nothing. There was no creativity. It got to the stage where it just felt, it was kind of just, you had to kind of laugh, because if you didn't, you'd cry, at just how bad we were.
What was it like actually being in the stadium though? What were fans saying around you? What was the kind of the feeling?
Do you know, there's a horrible stage that it comes with sometimes being at Hampden, that you get beyond the frustration stage and you just get it's the shrug of the shoulders, and it's Scotland, isn't it? It just felt like those times again where you're like, well, we're never scoring tonight. It's not going to happen. Just how bad can it get? It is frustrational because what you're watching is not good. And fans pay a lot of money to go to these games. We look forward to them. We've had a lot of build-up to the summer, and this is meant to be part of the kind of excitement building for those games in June. And then you're just left feeling crushed at the end of it. It's not a fun experience. So, yeah, I think fans are... It's fair to voice your opinion when you've watched such a bad performance. And it's you can get different outcomes where you might be cheated out of it, or you might have just... You've tried something new and it didn't quite pay off. But that wasn't tonight. Tonight we didn't try something new and it didn't pay off. It was just... We just didn't turn up.
There was certainly, for me, watching it at home... funny story aside, I actually had to run to Curry's an hour and 15 minutes from kickoff because my telly broke. So like, I text you saying, I am buying a telly right now. There was a massive turnaround and a costly one at that. But yeah, I got to see a lot on my big telly. High definition range. One thing that I always hate seeing is... when we have the ball, or any team, when any team has the ball, we tried to play so many diagonal balls, and Northern Ireland were so stuffy. They didn't want any football to be played in this game, and they were successful at it, because I think the worrying thing for me was, although we had so much possession and looked really dangerous against the Netherlands, which was quite exciting, when we had the ball in this game, we didn't look like we had any sort of desire. Nathan Patterson, when he had the ball, the amount of times he would pass it back, but the amount of times we had the ball and played diagonal balls or long balls and it just went into touch, do you know what I mean? It didn't even reach the man, or it went over the man, or it missed the man. That's a team who aren't like thinking together. There's no like telepathic reading of each other's minds, and that's what the training ground is for.
The football getting played, when you're kind of hoofing balls down the channel like that, that's why we're not seeing the likes of McGinn, McTominay, even Ferguson when he came on, Dykes as well. You're not seeing the best of these players because they're not the type of players that respond to long balls and hoofing it up and playing it in that manner. They want the ball to their feet. That's when they're at their best. We saw this in the Netherlands when we started. Now, the first hour against the Netherlands, it looked like the ball was magnetic against the boots of our players. It was beautiful football they were playing. One touch, beautiful passing. That you're looking at it going, and it reminded me of the Spain game in the way that we were standing there going, oh my God, it's Scotland we're watching. This is incredible. Now, and that wasn't the first time, because we did the same against Denmark as well. Incredible one-touch football. So we are capable of doing it. That was the complete opposite against Northern Ireland. It was not the same football being played. As you're saying, balls going over the top and balls going through, just not finding our man at all. And it's not how those players are set up to play. So it's not the right game. Now, you could be trying to test that out for different types of opposition that you might meet in the Euros. Steve Clarke said a really strange thing when he said Northern Ireland played exactly how we expected them to play, and he won't face a team like that at the Euros. So why did we play them?
It also shows you, well, why, what didn't work with this? What system were you ready to set up with to counteract that? Because it looked like there was no system that could have counteracted it. It's very hard to beat a low block, especially Northern Ireland. We shouldn't be losing to Northern Ireland.
No, we
it just should not be. It should not be happening. And it should be a 1-0 win or whatever, because any team that plays like that is very difficult to break down. But it felt like it completely destroyed any belief that our players had. I think we massively missed Callum McGregor. I think he goes so unnoticed in games a lot of the times, people then kind of discredit him and think that he's not actually useful. But I think you can blatantly see we're missing him right now. Nathan Patterson had one of his worst games in a Scotland shirt. And he needs the competition. He needs to have Aaron Hickey in the camp to know that he might no play, because Anthony Ralston is a fair enough backup, but he's not international level. I don't like saying these about players because they all work their absolute bollocks off. But tonight they didn't, because there was no intensity at all. There was nobody trying to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And you saw when we went 1-0 down, Conor Bradley's goal, which wasn't that great, let's be honest. Hendry, his reaction to the goal going in, he went absolutely ballistic. And I kind of think that's a good thing and a bad thing. I'm just thinking, where's the leadership? Where's the, come on, you should do better, rather than absolute rage and anger. There's two sides to the coin. Robertson going off injured as well, Laura. That is a massive concern. Looks like he's rolled his ankle, but it's really worrying.
I think I was having an existential crisis at this point. I just get so nervous when our biggest players go down at any point, and I'm scared to watch the closing to the end of the season because of this. He was, as Andy Robertson always is, the last player walking around the pitch clapping the fans at the end of the game. He has always been that player, no matter what the result is and no matter how few fans are left in the stand at full time. So full credit to him for that. He was limping around the pitch at full time, but at least he was on his feet. So I'm kind of trying to take heart from the fact that he was allowed to do that and the medical team didn't have him sitting down. Hopefully it was more of a precaution taking him off after he kind of got his foot stuck in the turf.
Rolled his ankle, kind of.
Yeah. But just kind of to touch on what you were kind of mentioning earlier, see the kind of the choice of players and stuff and Clark's kind of rotational limitations here in these two games. This is a slight concern for me. Now, we've talked extensively on this show about the goalkeepers, the debate over who's going to go to the Euros, who should be getting a game, blah, blah, blah. But Clark called up four goalkeepers for these two games, and he played his number one for 180 minutes. What are we learning from that? We know Angus Gunn is number one. We know he's going to play at the Euros. We know he's going to get picked in the squad. We don't know the other three, which two of the other three are going to get picked. Craig Gordon needs matches, unless he's absolutely not got a chance of going. We need to know who his number two is between Liam Kelly and Xander Clark. Why he didn't give 45 minutes to each goalie is absolutely beyond me. And then even his changes in terms of what, I mean, there was two changes on Tuesday night. Cooper came in for Porteous. Now, unless that's maybe a knock to Porteous, what are we learning from putting Cooper in there? We've seen him play there for years. Dykes again. Love Dykes to bits, but we know what he can do. And we're not learning anything new right now from this. Shankland, yeah, I get it. He was tested in the Netherlands game. Very unfortunate, hitting the woodwork as well. I really don't think you can criticise him for coming that close. And I don't think it's fair to refer that he's been tested on one match only, which I think was a kind of implication before the game when he got dropped. But that's the extent of the rotation. I don't really know what we learnt from that.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And, you know, before the Netherlands match, when Steve Clark said they were going to try a few things, try something a bit different, and then you saw that we were trying to be a possession-based team with a little bit of intensity. And I'm sure there are other things that a really clever football analyst would pick out. But we didn't see any of that in the Northern Ireland game. So I'm so frustrated and still hopeful that I'm clinging on to the Netherlands performance, even though it was 4-0. That performance, we could have won that game 4-0. That performance was enough for me to show everyone that we can play really good football, attractive football, and we can get clear-cut chances. The biggest issue, though, and the issue that we've had for over 20 years, 30 years even, is we don't have a top-quality striker who is going to finish clear-cut chances. Now, people might say, well, Shanklin's a top-quality striker. He scored loads of goals. But this is a different level, and there's different pressures to that level, and you have to do it under that pressure at that level to prove that you're top quality. And we haven't done it yet.
I think it's slightly harsh than Shankland.
No. I know that. But he hasn't done it yet.
Hold on. The boy came on in Georgia and scored a last-minute equaliser under pressure. Was the goal-scoring player that we needed in the right place at the right time. He very nearly did it against Netherlands as well. He didn't really get a chance against Northern Ireland long enough. He doesn't have the... I don't think he's got the experience yet at Scotland level to deal with maybe challenging and high-pressure moments and to kind of have that decision-making ability that maybe some of the other players in the team have, because they've got the experience of big European nights, playing at Euro 2020. So, yeah, I think that's maybe something we're lacking, because he's just not had the same time and opportunity. But he's still got it. He's still got the potential there to be that player.
Yeah, he's got the potential, but it's not. But the Scotland team don't have it yet. That's what I'm saying. The Scotland team don't have a top quality level striker that's going to finish chances, or at least 3 out of 5 chances that they might get, or even 2 out of 5 chances that they might get. And Shankly might do it at the Euros if he starts. We don't know if that is even going to happen either. Give me some hope, Laura.
Do you know what, right? We're being all doom and gloom, and it's a classic post-match depression, but... On the way home, I was watching the Wales penalty shootout against Poland, and it kind of put it all into perspective, because this is exactly the time of year we would have been playing a playoff had we not had an amazing campaign. Now, that could so easily have been us tonight against, say, Poland, for example, in a penalty shootout. And, I mean, I was getting nervous watching them, and I didn't really even care who went through, but I felt sick watching it with nerves, because penalties just do that to me. It is the most incredible, exciting, torturous thing in football. And I honestly, I don't even know, looking back, I don't know how I survived the Serbia shootout. Honestly, I don't. And I think going out on penalties at playoff final is the most heartbreaking thing you could possibly experience in football. More than anything that would ever happen at the actual tournament itself, to get this far and not reach the tournament would be crushing. And that all kind of put it into perspective for me, because had that been a playoff final against Northern Ireland and the performance that we put in, that would have been crushing to have had that build up and then just not turn up in that way. But in reality, it's a lesson for us. It doesn't mean anything in the long term. We will take a lot from it. Hopefully Steve Clarke will learn an awful lot from it and put it into place for the June friendlies. And the main thing is, we're going to Germany and we're going to have an amazing summer, and you've just got to look on the opposite side of that. Wales fans tonight are going to be feeling the complete opposite, and they're going to wish they were losing 1-0 to Ireland in a friendly.
I'm just going to say, Dunfermline fans, Dunfermline, well done tonight. You pumped this, nae twa doots.
Right, let's look at the rest of the leagues as they stand, and basically start with the Championship, looking ahead to next weekend's top-of-the-table clash, guys, between Dundee United and Raith Rovers. We all know the Championship is box office. Laura, you've put in the script a title decider. Is it not a bit early for that?
I feel like there's only 6 games left. Well, 6 for United, 7 for Raith because of what one in hand. I just feel like it's so tight that if one takes 3 points in this game, how are we going to turn it around? I hope it isn't a title decider, though, because the way it's been going, any time that one drops points, the other goes on to drop points the next day. And it's great, because it's like neither of them actually want to win this title. I just want it to go down to the final day. I want more drama, and I love the fact that it's so tight this late in the season.
I go back to the game that was televised between Raith and Arbroath, Raith were 2-0 up and then Arbroath go and win 3-2. Like, that sort of like crazy stuff happening in the Championship is why we love it so much.
Yeah.
It's nuts, man. And if you look at the remaining fixtures, I think what's funny, Raith actually go to Arbroath, or at home, sorry, to Arbroath in the final game. But Raith have got more games, I think. So they've got after Dundee United, they've got 3 home fixtures: Airdrie, Partick. Then they go away to Inverness and then Morton, and then it's Arbroath. Dundee United, after next weekend, it's Queen's Park away, Morton away, Air at home, Airdrie away, and then Partick at home. I don't want to be playing Partick at home in the last day of the season.
Actually, that's a very, very tough game. I saw that. So Dundee United have actually cut the ticket allocation for Raith Rovers for this game.
Really? I wonder why.
Well, yeah. Probably last time when Raith won at Tannadice, they had just under 2,000 fans there. And this time it's been cut to about 1,300. Now, I think the excuse that United gave was something to do with, like, not security, but, like, the structuring and logistics element to it. There's not a real reason for it that they've given. But well, what is interesting is if it sells out, they're just leaving that area empty just now. They're not filling that with Dundee United fans. They're just reducing the away allocation, which I can see the argument for. Well, we want our fans are in their tickets are in demand from our home fans. I can see that argument. Not necessarily agree with it, but I can understand it. But if you're just going to leave the seats empty, just to reduce the impact that the away fans will have is quite bitter. I like shithousery, but I don't think this is shithousery.
I think it's also, you know, we've seen in recent seasons, club like St Mirren or Kilmarnock or whatever, reducing the away allocations, especially for if the Old Firm are in town. But we've seen that be flipped around. So what they're taking away from away fans, they are giving to their home fans, and they are getting consistently bigger, more consistent home supports, which is what you want to see. This isn't what this is it? It's just, it kind of seems a bit spiteful. It's just like they just didn't want as many leery people coming from Fife for the game. So, but I mean, if I were a Wraith player or a Wraith fan, I'd be like, that's a sign to me that they're really feeling the heat of this title race. And I would try and translate that onto the pitch. And obviously they got the result last time they were playing at Tannadice as well. So yeah, it's a tasty run, because like, see when just you were reading out the fixtures there, Andrew, and it's like, oh, you know, home to air, Jay, away to Cali Thistle. It's really interesting, because like, pretty much any of those games, I'd be like, I can't call that. I would be like, maybe if they're getting a bit of momentum behind it, and you'd be like, oh, they should win the home games or whatever. But as we've seen, like you were just talking about the Arbroath game, there was no reason why Arbroath should have won that game with Raith 2-0 up and cruising, and yet Arbroath were able to turn it around. But the championship is just so wild like that. Like anybody has the ability to take points off anybody. So that's why I don't think it will necessarily be a title decider. It could be something that propels one of the team to give them those extra legs as they're hitting the final kind of miles of the marathon race. But yeah, I think it will still be all to play for. I think it will go down to the final day of the season, which would be magnificent, having Dundee United versus Thistle and Wraith hosting Arbroath as well. Because even that, if they're playing an already relegated Arbroath, I wouldn't put it against the Red Lichdies getting something out of it.
Yeah, it's beautiful for us, but I think if you're a Dundee United fan, you're pretty frustrated and angry that you're not running away with it. Like those fans must be like, what is going on? It shouldn't be this difficult for them, especially last time when they had to come up from the Championship. It was a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But there you go. League's change. League One, obviously, we've talked about Falkirk already on the podcast. Obviously, Hamilton were winners at the weekend against Cove, who couldn't catch the likes of Montrose and Alloa, who are in the other kind of playoff positions. But it's mostly interesting at the bottom of the table, not just because my team, Queens, are down there and I'm desperately worried that we're in a relegation scrap, but let's face it, Queens are. However, it was a massive victory for Queens, beating Alloa, who are their perennial bogey team. It was an important 2-0 victory for Queens, which takes the pressure off Marvin Bartley a little bit. The unfortunate thing for Queen of the South fans is Annan Athletic, the local rivals, also won, beating Kelty Hearts. But Stirling Albion, they were victorious as well. So that kind of three teams that are now battling for a kind of to get out of the relegation playoff battle, should I say. But credit to Annan, because I think if you look back at the start of the year, I think they were 9 points adrift of like eighth place. So they've done amazingly in the last couple of, last 2 months or so. So it's quite interesting. Shall I talk about League Two now as well? Disappointing for Bonnie Rigg, because they've sacked their manager, Robbie Horn, who's been there for, 5 years. Rose are winless in 9, and they've only got one win in 2024. So they're now just 2 points above Clyde, who have totally turned things around under Ian McCall, like we predicted. It's just madness. So Clyde actually drew with Spartans. If they had won, they would have been level. So it's absolutely mad how they must. I can't remember the points difference it was.
I think the biggest it was there. Was it 13 points? I mentioned it on the show last week. I think it was 13 points at one point. And that's only like 9 weeks ago or something like that. It's this year. It was when the gap was at its biggest and they've clawed it back. I think I said in the show last week, because they're the most formed team in League Two. So I think of their last six matches, last seven matches, it's 4 wins, 2 draws, and 1 defeat.
Yeah, that's absolutely mental. And obviously Stranraer, 3 defeats in a row. They're level in points with Bonnie Riggs. So I think Clyde are going to do it. At the other end, anyway, though, the likes of Stenhouse Muir, they've still got like an insane points gap ahead of closest challengers, Peterhead in second place. But they've drawn their last. They've 1 win in 7 matches.
They've been on the beach since Christmas. I don't think they ever came back from their Christmas holidays, to be quite frank. But they don't really need to. They're just going to trundle to the title, having a lovely time, yeah. Get the deck chairs out,
lagging from Lapland. Anyway. That's it for another show. We're done. Thank you, Laura. Thanks, Finn. Thanks to John as well from Falkirk Daft Podcast. And for you, the listener. So I'll do you the honour to go away and listen to something else, which is what you should definitely do now. Goodbye.